Welcome. You are listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's always better to hear it live, this is a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. Enjoy our latest installment. Shabbat Shalom. Sometimes the things that we talk about are not really the things that we are talking about. It could be mundane, a spouse, hypothetically, who neglects to unload the dishwasher. The ensuing argument isn't about the dishes, it's about the division of household responsibilities, or assumptions regarding gender, or maybe even about one spouse's unspoken struggle with professional direction. The point is not that the dishwasher argument doesn't exist. The dishes are not imagined. The point, as taught in Pastoral Counseling 101, is that our hypothetical couple in question would also do well to address the unspoken issues lurking beneath the surface. And what's true for our households is also true for much bigger conversations. Political debates about tax policy aren't just about balancing budgets, they're about wealth distribution, fighting poverty, or racial justice. The Reagan-era debates over military spending weren't just about the Defense Department, they were about whether our country had learned the lessons of Vietnam and what those lessons were. Arguments about our president aren't just about one individual. They're about the values, missions, and direction of our country. And as a Jewish community, the same holds true. The half-Israelite blasphemer that I mentioned that was thrown out of the Israelite camp in our Torah reading isn't just about heterodox views. It's about whether the Israelites were willing to countenance individuals of heterogeneous origins. More recently, you may recall Nathan Engleder's short story bearing the name What We Talk About When We Talk About Anne Frank, where the main characters speculate among who of their non-Jewish friends would hide them in the event of a second Holocaust, a short story bringing into relief a host of unspoken Jewish insecurities living in a non-Jewish world. My favorite example is the subject about which I wrote my doctoral thesis. The great Jewish debates of the 1950s and 60s revolved around the subject of revelation, the question of Torah Misinai, whether the Torah is or isn't divine. Magazine articles were written, books published, movements formed, rabbis hired and fired, all on the question of whether God did or didn't write the Bible. Given that the substance of these debates, biblical criticism, Darwin and otherwise, had been around for centuries, it's fair to ask why Jews were relitigating the issue again. My answer was, I'll email you my dissertation, was that the issue of revelation was actually code for seismic shifts in world Jewry. A generation of Jews who were entering universities, Jewish engagement with Protestant biblical theology, the rise of evangelicism, and so much more. But most of all, the debates reflected a shell-shocked post-Holocaust Jewry grappling with that which, in Will Herberg's words, brought man to the brink of the abyss. These Jews weren't just arguing over whether God did or didn't write the Torah. These Jews were arguing over where was God in Auschwitz, and can we still believe in that God? No different than any other person or any other people, Jews spend much of their time talking about things when what they are really talking about is different and sometimes far deeper. These days, Jews are no longer debating who wrote the Bible or whether the Exodus did or didn't happen, nor for that matter are we discussing whether we should or shouldn't drive to synagogue on Shabbat or other debates of yesteryear. Today, our arguments and conversations revolve around one subject, one place, one word, Israel. Israel is what brings us together and tears us apart. We advocate in order to keep Israel and our relationship with Israel strong. We're anxiety-ridden at signs of the relationship withering. We fear for our children's experience with BDS on campus, and we hope that they sign up for Birthright. The labels that define the Jewish tribes are no longer about belief or observance, Orthodox, Conservative, and Reform. They're about our views on Israel, AIPAC, J Street, and the rest of the alphabet soup of the Jewish world. Across the spectrum, who you are as a Jew is measured by way of your perceived proximity to Israel, often with unseemly results. A Jew who is openly critical of Israel is labeled a self-hating Jew. A Jew who is supportive of the Israeli government is labeled a colonialist oppressor. We call for vigilance against those on the left trafficking in anti-Zionist and anti-Semitic tropes, as well as those populist nationalists at the right, oddly aligned with a strong Israel. I could go on, but the point is one and the same. We talk a whole lot about Israel, which is a strange state of affairs if you think about it, given that we don't live there, vote there, serve in Israel's military, or pay its taxes. We're not Israeli citizens. And yet Israel has become the organizing principle, the civil religion, and sometimes the actual religion of American Jewry. Years from now, when some industrious doctoral student writes a thesis on present-day North American Jewish communal conversation, it will be the debates over Israel more than any other topic that will be shown to be the dominating conversation of our time. Debates that will be revealed to have been code for the real conversations of our time. So let's put my little theory to test. If when we talk about Israel, we are actually talking about something else, then what is that something else that we are talking about? In other words, if Israel is the Rorschach test for contemporary American Jewry, revealing our hopes, fears, foibles, and fissures, what are the conversations that we are not having that we need to have that sit just beneath the surface? First and foremost, to live in the presence of the State of Israel, but not in Israel, reminds us of the choice we in this room have made, not only of where we live, but how we have chosen to define our Jewish lives. When we talk about Israel, we're not just talking about Israel, but we're talking about a Jewish community that defines its existence in a manner fundamentally different than we do. Israeli Jews are defined by way of physical borders and national identity. American Jewry is defined by way of religious borders, the communities we join, the practices we observe, and whom we marry. Their border incursions come from Lebanon and Gaza. Our border incursions come from intermarriage. At 18, our children go off to campus to engage in liberal arts and universal values. At 18, their children go off to serve in the army and defend a nation. American Jewish identity is a matter of choice and volition. Israeli identity is a matter of necessity and self-preservation. As Golda Meir explained to Joe Biden in the nervous hours before the Yom Kippur War, "Don't worry, we have a secret weapon against the Arabs. We have no place to go." Israelis don't have a place to go. American Jews do. We can assimilate. I'm not judging here. I'm simply noting the emergence of two different communities animated by different concerns, contexts, and sense of mission. For American Jews to talk about Israel, or for that matter, Israeli Jews to talk about American Jewry, a sermon for another day, is to put up a lens, or more precisely, a mirror to our own Jewish identities, bringing our strengths, weaknesses, and realities to the fore. Second, I think our arguments about Israel aren't just over Israel, but they're about Jewish power. For 2,000 years, the Jewish story has been one of exile and second-class citizenship, thus explaining our people's historic alliance with progressive politics and the plight of the needy and oppressed. And now, lo and behold, there is a Jewish state in possession of great power. Jewish sovereignty is cause for celebration. We certainly, as a people, have paid a price for its historic absence. And yet, American Jews squirm when we see that power used in ways that we think contradict the liberal Torah upon which we have been raised. There may have been a time when the idealized Ari Ben-Kanan kibbutznik image of Israel sat comfortably alongside the liberal politics of American Jewry, but that time has long since passed. Politically, religiously, militarily, Israel has shifted to the right, understandably prioritizing its own self-preservation, even as North American Jewry continues on its liberal and universalist lean. Like two siblings born of the same household, who meet years later to find they have very little to say to each other, so too North American Jewry and Israeli Jewry. Again, my aim isn't to point fingers. It's not about right or wrong. It's just to point out that when American Jewry calls foul over the chief rabbinate, or the squandering of a two-state solution, or the chipping away of Israel as a democracy, it's about those things, but it's not just about those things. It's about our effort to sort out what it means to have a relationship with a Jewish state that is perceived to be increasingly at odds with the very values at the core of our own Jewish self-understanding. It's a state of affairs made even more awkward by the current bromance between a populist-leaning Israeli prime minister and the American president, concurrent to the co-opting of the Palestinian cause by the American left. There is less and less breathing room for progressive Jews who seek to be strong Zionists. Discussions on Israel have become proxy for the question of whether a Jew can be concerned with self-preservation and our shared humanity, particularism and universalism, all at the same time. Third, I think we American Jews talk about Israel so much because doing so displaces the real elephant in the room, the thing that we should be talking about but aren't, and that is our Judaism. At some point, for far too many Jews, support for Israel became a substitute for Judaism. It's just plain easier to write a check than it is to keep yourself and your children home on a Friday night to light Shabbat candles. We're more willing to take a day off work for an AIPAC conference than we are for Shavuot. We're more at home discussing the relative merits of the Iran deal and what grades of plutonium can be weaponized than we are opening a Sidur. If it were just the case that our Israel engagement was some sort of compensatory act for a paper-thin American Jewish identity, that would be wake-up call enough. But it's far worse. The name-calling, the self-destructive takedown politics of American Jewry on the right and the left reflects that it's easier to call someone out on their position on Israel than it is to come face-to-face with the at-risk Jewish identities of our children and grandchildren. 9 times out of 10, I promise you, the people who write me nasty emails on the subject of Israel on both sides are not the ones who are in shul, on committees, and supportive of the synagogue. Were those individuals to spend less time picking people off and more time building up Jewish identity, less of their resources supporting the extremes of the Israel debate, and more of it making Jewish day school, camping, and synagogue life affordable, less time forwarding emails and more time forwarding Torah, not only would American Jewry be in better shape, but our relationship with Israel would be as well. Why do American Jews talk about Israel so much? Because we would rather do that than turn the lens on the endangered condition of our own Judaism. Lest there be any misunderstanding, let me be clear what I'm saying and what I am not saying. I am not suggesting for a second that American Jewry should not be engaged with Israel. As I've said from this pulpit many times over, to be an American Jew and not be engaged with Israel is to abdicate the calling of Jewish identity today. We all need to support the work of Israel advocacy to the degree that we are able. I'm also not saying that the problems facing our relationship with Israel are imagined. The dishwasher still needs to be unloaded. I remain deeply concerned with matters of religious pluralism in Israel, with the future of Israeli democracy, the fate of the two-state solution, all the more so with the soon-to-be-released American peace plan. These are real conversations and arguments, not imagined. My point is simply to give voice to the fact that these conversations are not just about Israel. They are about us, And we do ourselves, Israel, and our relationship a disservice to brush that fact under the rug. Like any relationship in need of continued care, we need to pause and consider the relationship in its fullness, to see the forest from the trees, and to see beyond the symptoms of this or that crisis. 71 years ago this month, the State of Israel was founded. It is the most public manifestation of Jewish identity in our time, representing our collective hopes and dreams, even as it is doing its level best just to figure itself out. We share, as American Jews, a history and a peoplehood with Israel, even as we choose not to exercise the option to live there. Our souls and our destiny are bound together, even as we realize we are not them and they are not us. There is a lot of there, and a lot still left to unpack. But maybe that's the best gift that we can give our relationship with Israel this year. Less name-calling and more dialogue, more effort to understand and to be understood. In other words, to talk about what we really need to talk about. It's not everything, but it is something. And frankly, this relationship is just too important to have it any other way. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you for listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. See you in shul. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.